At that point, I was practically an atheist. I just thought, you know what? This is all a myth. It can't be real. And so I was so completely, God wasn't even on my radar. Cut to 6 months later in LA, I'm at this coffee shop and we notice this table next to us and with kind of young people, and they have Bibles on their table. I had never seen a Bible in LA in my adult life.
Beckett Cook, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
This is a big deal. Whenever anybody tells a story like this, principally for what I mentioned earlier, that people act in this culture as though these stories don't exist. You don't exist. You're bad news. We don't want to hear your story. You're weird.
Yeah.
But I want to hear your story extremely much, and I'm sure my audience does. And so where do we start?
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas.
In a large Catholic, I'm the youngest of eight kids, and at a very young age, I started to sense this attraction to the same sex. In that world, in Dallas and in Catholic school, I mean, obviously it was foreboding. So I had this sort of double life, and kind of externally I was a normal kid, but internally I was wrestling with this this kind of feeling inside and didn't know what to do with it. And I never thought of it as like a permanent condition. I just thought, oh, this will eventually pass and, you know, my life will be whatever, normal. But as I grew older and into high school, and I my best friend in high school was gay. We came out to each other. And then in college, the same. I befriended a guy who was gay. We came out to each other in college. It was a whole thing. And then, so it wasn't really at that time my identity yet. It was still was kind of like this thing of, I don't know what this is, but I'm definitely attracted to guys. And it wasn't until after college I moved to Tokyo for a year, and my roommate's best friend from Dallas came to visit us in Tokyo, and he and we fell in love. That was when the identity of homosexuality became cemented. And I came out to my family, my parents.
Now, what was that like for your parents? Because you said they were devout. Obviously, naming their kid Beckett sounds like they are devout. Having eight kids, I mean, you know when you're dealing with people who take it seriously, and you know when you're dealing with cultural or cafeteria Catholics, so-called. That must have been tough for your parents.
It actually wasn't tough, strangely enough. My brother became an evangelical Christian. He was like the Martin Luther in my family, and kind of led this like this reformation in my family. And that was much more difficult for my parents than me coming out as gay to them.
Wow.
So when I came out to my parents as gay, they
were like, oh, thank God he's not Protestant.
Exactly.
And that is very funny.
I know. And they actually, it didn't take it badly, because I was the youngest of eight kids. And so by the time they got to me and I told them, or they found out actually, they were just kind of like, they were really lovely about it actually. They were sweet.
Sounds like it.
And yeah. My dad was just great about it. And my mother cried, of course. And I told, at the time I was like, guys, it's fine. Like, it's okay. It's normal. Don't worry about me. Like, it's great. And, but yeah, they were pretty great about it. I moved to LA, I was in this group of friends and we kind of had this fun life, and there were two goals in our life. So everyone had the same goals. To make a mark on this world and do something really fabulous.
Right.
And to find true love. And that's all we did all the time. And we went to parties, we went to premieres, we went to Golden Globes, Oscars, Emmys, like Vanity Fair parties. And I went to fashion weeks in New York and Paris all the time. And I had kind of a really fun life in LA. I went to dinners at everyone's house,
Now, what were you doing for a living during that time?
So then, so the acting and the writing were kind of difficult, and I sold a couple things to various networks, but it wasn't really taking off. So I fell into set design.
Production design is pretty cool stuff.
In the fashion world. So I would do shoots for the cover of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar, but also like Gap campaigns.
You're really talented.
Well, I mean, I don't know. At a certain point, I guess maybe 10 years into this life, or 10 to 12 years into this, the law of diminishing returns kind of started to set in. Mm. And I started to feel kind of, is that all there is to a fire. And so I was actually in Paris at Fashion Week in March of 2009, and I was at Stella McCartney's after party from her show.
Who wasn't? Am I right?
Right? Who exactly? I mean, everyone was there.
You were at Stella McCartney's after party. That's, you know, that's, and most people would think that's pretty impressive stuff there.
Well, it wasn't, because I was there that night, and people, everyone from the fashion world was there drinking champagne, dancing, and I was sitting with Rachel Zoe and her husband, Roger. She had a fashion show on Bravo. But I was sitting with them, and I remember just looking out over the crowd of people with my glass of champagne, and I was like, this isn't it.
Wow. That is what people think. Oh, boy, if I could be there. So you're telling me you were there, and while you were there,
I just felt utterly empty, and I was in this panic, and I just ghosted the party. I didn't tell anyone I was leaving. I just left, and I went back, and I was just up all night till like 5 a.m. in a panic of like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Anyway, after that party in Paris, I came back to LA, kind of got busy with work again and sort of forgot about that. But I knew that I was gay, and that Christianity, I couldn't be a part of that club.
Right.
I always knew that. And yeah. So God at that point in my life was not even, he wasn't, at that point I was practically an atheist. I just thought, you know what, this is all a myth. It can't be real. And so I was so completely, God wasn't even on my radar. Cut to 6 months later in LA, I'm at this coffee shop, and we notice this table next to us, and with kind of young people, and they have Bibles on their table. I had never seen a Bible in LA in my adult life. So we were fascinated. And my friend was an atheist too, gay as well. And we ended up in this conversation with this group of, my friend liked to kind of engage and stir the pot a little bit. So we ended up talking to these people. And it literally, I turned around and I said, are you guys Christians? And they were like, yeah. And I said, you know, this is like a Christian's like fantasy come true. I'm like, what do you believe? Like, I grew up Catholic. I don't really know what, I don't remember anything. What do you believe? And they told me the gospel. They told me what they believed. And we had this really great conversation for like an hour. And then it got to the $64,000 question. And I said, well, what does your church believe about homosexuality? And one of the guys was like, well, we believe it's a sin. And what's weird about that moment is like a year before or 5 years before, I would have kind of like thrown my coffee on them. But I just kind of was like, And I kind of appreciated the frankness and their just kind of honesty about it, instead of beating around the bush and dodging the question. So they just were like, yeah, we believe this. And so they invited me to come to their church the following Sunday. So I had a whole week to kind of ponder this idea of going to, I had never been to an evangelical church in my life. So I didn't even know what it was. I had no idea. So the following Sunday, I wake up and I'm like, what am I gonna do? And I get dressed, get in my car, and I drive to Hollywood to this auditorium where the church is held, the service is held.
I mean, that's really brave and kind of amazing of you to have done that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was God kind of.
Well, I'm sure it was. Nonetheless, you know, God cannot force us to do what we don't want to do.
But it was weird. It almost felt like that though. It's like I was in my car and I'm like, I guess I'm going. So I walk into this auditorium, and I'm used to kind of like stained glass windows and smoke and bells and whistles from like the Catholic
and
church.
And cassocks.
And so I walk in, and it's just plain auditorium, very spare. And it was kind of refreshing to me. I'm like, oh, this is kind of nice. And then I heard the Christian worship band was playing. So I walk in, I hear the Christian music, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot about Christian music. Like, ugh. And then I was like, wait a minute, it's not bad. And so I just found a seat. No, I didn't meet anyone there. I just went by myself, found a seat near the front. The pastor comes out, Tim Chaddick. He's preaching the gospel for an hour. And I'm literally everything he's saying, every sentence, every word he's saying is resonating as truth in my heart and in my mind, and I don't know why. And I'm like, what is going on? And I'm literally on the edge of my seat. And I don't want him to leave the stage. I want him to continue preaching. And he finally, you know, leaves, and he says, there's people on the sides of the church if you want prayer for anything, blah, 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 in the prayer ministry. And then the worship music comes on for another 30 minutes. So there was this moment I'm like, should I go over there and ask for prayer? If I do, it's humiliating, and like people are probably watching me that invited me here. And I was like, whatever, I'm just gonna go, I'm here. So I walk over to the side, I go up to this guy, and I'm like, hey, I'm here, I don't know what I believe, but I'm here. And he said, let me pray for you. And he prayed for me, and it was so lovely, and it seemed really intense and very long. And he prayed for me, and I was like, how does this straight dude love me so much? And it just felt very loving. And then he finished his prayer. I went back to my seat. I'm sitting in my seat. The worship music is playing for another 25 minutes. So I'm sitting in my seat, processing the sermon, the prayer, the music, and all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit's like, God revealed himself to me in that moment. And I was like, whoa.
Now, what do you mean? Because I'm sure there are many people listening saying, what does that mean, the Holy Spirit? You mean you felt the palpable presence of God suddenly?
Yes. Okay. And it was like in my mind's eye. It was like I could see, it was almost like the curtains had finally parted and I could see the truth, reality for the first time in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh. It was like Isaiah in the temple when he sees the holiness of God and comes undone. I came undone. I started absolutely bawling and couldn't, uncontrollably for the next 25 minutes, couldn't stop crying. And God in that moment was like, I'm God, Jesus is my son, heaven's real, hell's real, the Bible's true, you're now adopted into my kingdom, welcome. What? And I was just like, whoa. And I was crying not only because I just met the King of the universe, Jesus Christ, but I was also crying over my sin. So I had this kind of supernatural encounter with God.
It wasn't kind of supernatural.
It was major supernatural.
It was definitively supernatural.
It was like Paul wrote to Damascus kind of stuff. I mean, it was that intense.
It was that intense.
It was that intense.
Now, were there people around you wondering if you're okay?
Yeah, that's funny because there were people actually got very concerned about me because I was retching. I mean, I was crying so hard that people thought they needed to call someone.
Did they use the paddles on you?
Yes. Yeah, they did. But
jaws of life.
Yeah, the jaws of life. Okay. But in that moment, I also knew so clearly. I mean, it was like everything just came, like God was like, just downloaded all this stuff on me. And I knew in that moment that being a gay man was no longer who I was, and that wasn't going to be a part of my life anymore. I just knew instantly.
See, that's what people find so hard to believe, because your book is A Change of Affection, A Gay Man's Incredible Story of Redemption. The incredible part, because I think there are many people, when they hear someone talking about a spiritual experience, they say, well, that's great for you, but that can't happen to me. But it sounds to me like you were one of those people to whom it couldn't happen until it did.
Yeah, I got home and I got into bed to take a nap because I was so overwhelmed by what had just happened. And God, it was like Moses in the cleft of the rock. God did it again. He just was like, and I was like, whoa. And I jumped out of my bed crying again. And I just, in the middle of my bedroom, I was like, God, you have my whole life. Like, this is it. And I was done. I was just like, this is it. It's my life. I couldn't stop reading the Bible and listening to I listened to like 20 sermons a day. I was obsessed.
That's fanaticism.
It's fanaticism.
Anything more than 18, fanaticism.
I listened to all of Tim Keller's oeuvre and like every, you know, all these other, Dick Lucas and all these other guys. So, and then I continued in doing set design, but I knew God had some kind of calling on my life. And then a few years later, God paid for seminary for 4 years. And that was an amazing experience. And then I wrote, while I was in seminary, I wrote the book. And here we are.
Thank you for writing this book. Thank you for living your life. The book is A Change of Affection. Beckett Cook is the author. And Beckett, really, just a joy to get to know you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.